from the Squamish Chief.
This is the Squamish Sound. I'm Keely Bartlett.
And I'm Stephen Chua. This is the first episode of our weekly podcast.
For the first segment we're doing, it's going to be called The Story Behind the Story, where we take you into the newsroom. We'll talk about what did and didn't get into the paper this week. So we're going to start with Stephen's cover story, local RCMP jail Squamish's most notorious fentanyl dealer. So the question we've been getting from readers since we published the story is, why isn't the drug dealer being named?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a fair question because typically, you know, in a lot of reports, you'll see like, you know, we've arrested this guy, we got him, we're great. And it's, you know, often like there's an element of theatrics to it where the police will like go on the podium and say that. But in this case, that did not happen because where we got this information was from an actual RCMP update to municipal council. And they're giving this update because council is actually talking about the municipal budget right now. So typically, in order to, you know, justify the bills that the city would be paying to the RCMP, they come over and say, you know what, here's where we succeeded, this is what you can expect to get out of us, and so on and so forth. We have put in a request to see the name of the person. We put that in yesterday, but we haven't heard a response back from the RCMP as of now. And a lot of it, I think, boils down to the fact that the RCMP and police in general, at least in my experience and in a lot more and a lot of reporters I know, their experience generally have been taking a lot more of a conservative approach to naming either victims or naming suspects and perpetrators. Mm-hmm. And what it boils down to is a lot of people are seeing that officers are taking a more conservative approach to looking and interpreting the Freedom and Privacy Act here in BC. And it's not just here in Squamish. A lot of people I've heard have been noticing this very same thing with respect to, for example, different municipalities across BC and even across the country. And in some cases, like we've heard, like it's been in the news where officers have come out and said, you know what, we are not going to be naming, for example, the victims of homicides anymore. Mm-hmm. That was like a very big thing that was quite present in the headlines last year. And it's kind of an overall trend for officers and other government services to take to less often or sometimes not at all mm-hmm. name people involved in crimes and deaths.
Yeah, and another thing that's really important to note is there is a lot of legality around who they can and can't name. They can't name victims. You can't name sexual assault victims unless that person specifically says that they want to be publicly named. There's a whole process for that kind of information being put out to the public. So the first thing is that the police have not given us this name. We're not holding back that information. Mm-hmm. And I was also wondering if later in your article you mentioned that the dealer is in jail now, but another drug dealer has moved into the same residence. So I was wondering if they might not be releasing the first drug dealer's name so that they still aren't publishing that residence location, the address, vicariously by naming the person. Some people might know where he lived, and then now we have this more details into an active investigation that they're doing on this second drug dealer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it goes back to a really interesting point that you mentioned earlier in one of our story meetings was holdback information. I was wondering if you could maybe tell us a little bit about how that works.
So a lot of active investigations, they will not release all of the information that they might have about a case because let's say that they're interrogating a suspect and that suspect gives them details that weren't in the news, then they know that that person has information that they either know the suspect who is involved or they were directly involved themselves. So that's one of the reasons why police won't give all of the details about a crime, especially if they haven't captured the person that they believe is the perpetrator.
Yeah, and I guess with respect to going back to the legality of naming names, it's still kind of a bit of it's a gray area. There's no hard legislation that at this point says you should or shouldn't name suspects or victims at this point. It seems to be a thing that a lot of detachments have kind of made their own stand, their own choices with respect to that. And at least with respect to one of the reports that came out of our sister papers, the Times Colonist, the Privacy Act says that information must be disclosed if it's in, quote, the public interest. And it doesn't really dig a lot deeper into what constitutes as public interest. In that case, basically what would be happening is each detachment would be saying, hey, what is in the public interest? And that can be a debate that creates a different result for every single decision-making body. So that could be one of the reasons why you see perhaps, for example, Vancouver has generally been very, very liberal with releasing names. The VPD, they typically release names of homicide victims. They hold lots of pressers. They're very, very public. Whereas a detachment here in Squamish may take a different approach.
Mm-hmm. And that might be because it's a smaller community. Sometimes there are bigger ramifications. And so the whole idea of in the public interest, one of the reasons why in this particular case with the fentanyl dealer, he might not have been named because he is currently in jail. And so there's a difference between what the police will hold back, and there's a difference between when the judicial system in the courts have a publication ban on something. So it might be that he's still in that gray area of processing. If they haven't gone to trial yet, they would be more resistant to naming that person.
Mm-hmm. All right. I guess the next point of that story would be how the Me Too movement has actually had a little bit of an effect here in Squamish. So one of the things that happens during this meeting is, you know, the officers come in, they present a whole bunch of statistics. Here's what kinds of crimes are going up. Here's what's going down. And one point of interest was Inspector Kara Triant, who was giving this whole presentation. She said that there's an increase in reported sexual assault. So in 2018, this past year, we got 36. 2017, the year before, that was 23. So that's an increase of about 56% according to the police statistics. And the interesting piece here that she mentioned was it's not necessarily that there are more or less sexual assaults happening, but it could really be a change in how often people are willing to report them. One of the things she said is, you know what, the cultural shift has happened. With all this publicity coming in from the Me Too movement, maybe women are more forthcoming in trying mm-hmm. to do that. The other factor that she mentioned, which I thought was really interesting, is that they've changed the way that they allow sexual assaults to be reported. There's a new third-party reporting system that's being piloted with House Sound Women's Center. And Trion says that basically what this allows women to do, if they don't want to be identified, is they can anonymously report to the center, and then the center will then give that information to the police. And in doing so, it creates like an extra layer between police and the reporter that some people may feel a little bit more comfortable with. So that's the other, I think, really interesting piece that came out of this.
Yeah. So we're going to move along to our next story, which is the grad rates. So one of the things that I reported on this week was the Ministry of Education in BC released their grad rates for our district. And at first glance, the 2017-2018 grad rate reads at 100%, which is pretty confusing because not all of the students of that graduation year graduated. So what's going on behind the numbers here? Basically, when I spoke to the assistant superintendent, Chris Nicholson, he told me that because their system and how they collect their data looks at a 6-year graduation rate. So instead of going from, let's say, grade 8 to grade 12, the students who take longer to graduate or were held back the year before, when they graduate in the 2017-18 year, but they were supposed to graduate in the 2016-17 year, it makes it look as if there are more students from 1 year graduating. So theoretically, you could actually have number look like 104% students graduated, which we know is impossible, but it's just because they have the ability to have an inflated number of students. So he did explain that the trends are increasing for our district, especially with the students who are in any special needs programming and the Aboriginal graduation rate is also going up, which he says is part of their First Nations partnerships and because they're listening to families and parents and the students and trying to make a more student-focused approach in their teaching, which is pretty interesting. But that explains generally what's happening in our district and with those numbers.
Mm-hmm. So correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like because we are getting students that are not only graduating this year, but students who might have had to repeat a grade, we're getting more, like an inflated number.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the assistant superintendent said that they are a little concerned about that because they're worried about when reporters like us see those numbers, we're like, oh, wow, look how great it did. But what if it drops down to 99% next year?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a decrease, but that could just be that they don't have that secondary group of students inflating that number anymore, that maybe the graduation rate of that year is still the same, but there are just a number of factors that could have a bigger impact on that percentage, not necessarily the how many students are graduating.
That's really interesting. So let's say if there are no students left over who aren't retaking grade 12, that could result in a lower overall number according to the statistics because that student body is no longer inflating the kids who are actually coming up.
And so it's similar with the Indigenous student graduation rate as well. Let's say that one year we've got 56 students and 54 of them graduate. But the next year we've got 60 Indigenous students and the same number, 54 of them graduate. That also shows that there's a less percentage of that population in the school system, but there's still the number of students graduating. So it's hard to take that information and see, you know, what it does look like a decrease. And based on just that population number, it technically would be, even if the graduation rate is staying the same.
All right. Well, that's a really interesting point. I guess moving along here, we also have really interesting thing, you know, the Grand Fondo is a huge event that passes through here. And according to your reporting, Keely, we know that there's been kind of a new development with respect to how people can race
That's
in at least
right.
one category.
Speaking of people coming through Squamish, so the Grand Fondo Whistler announced this year that they're adding e-bikes to just one of the categories, something that we're seeing on our Facebook pages. A lot of people are up in arms about adding e-bikes because they do give an advantage on hills. But the founders of the RBC Grand Fondo Whistler have told us that it's just for the medio category, which is the 55-kilometer stretch between Whistler and then looping back to Whistler. So what's going to happen is they're actually not going to time those riders. They're not going to be actually racing, but they're experiencing the event. And so the idea is that it's getting more people on their bikes and more people who maybe they're a little older and they can't power up those hills like they used to. They'll be able to stay with their families if they're competing, or it gives people who are training but aren't quite there yet the opportunity to still be part of the event. But it is really interesting that we just want to iterate again. In the article, it says explicitly that it is just one category and it is not being timed.
All right. Well, with that being said, we're going to take it over to our editor's pick. So we're going to be bringing in our editor, Jennifer Thuncher. She's going to be telling us about her favorite story this week. So, Jen, what's your pick?
This week is a sad story. Squamish single mom battling cancer dies was the headline, and it was about a really beloved local mom, Muriel Mouse Hansen.
And, you know, sadly, people die from cancer quite regularly. What makes this particular story unique?
You're right, and everyone's family that experiences this is sad. Mariel was a unique case in that, one, it was a quick situation where she found out she was terminal. We talked to her, and then literally 2 weeks later, she passed away. And she was very popular in the community with a lot of the moms in particular who knew her through the school system. She has two young daughters and is a single mom. So it was sort of an impactful story for a lot of people locally.
Mm-hmm. Is there anyone word on how the kids are going to be doing and what their situation is?
Yeah, they're going to be living with Mariel's mom, their grandma. And so there's a few fundraisers that we highlighted in the stories that we've run that people can find online. And then also, because she was so well known, her celebration of life is going to be public. So it's going to be on February 16th at Squamish's Totem Hall. And at 2 p.m., her mom has asked that anyone with stories about Mariel that are appropriate for her daughters to hear come armed with those stories.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add about this?
That's about it. It's just a sad story, and you know, we're supposed to be objective whenever we're writing these, and we try to be, but this was a tough one. She was a lovely lady, and it was nice to talk to her the few times that I did.
All right, Jen, thank you for your time.
You've been listening to The Squamish Sound, brought to you by the staff of the Squamish Chief newspaper. Let us know if you have a story you'd like in the newspaper. You can read our stories online at squamishchief.com, subscribe to our podcast, and, of course, subscribe to the newspaper.